Okay, good afternoon everybody, and once again it's lovely to be part of Lunch and Learn at Kinloss. It's been some time since we've had a chance to have a share together, but I can see that the lunch is certainly an improvement on what we used to get, if you have to make it yourselves, but there are always advantages and disadvantages to every situation. So wonderful to have the opportunity to learn Torah with you. As Rabbi Lawrence said, the topic of today's shiur is, did Avraham Avinu wear tefillin? And he subtitled it, were they Rashi's or Rabbeinu Tam's? Always reminds me of the joke of the fellow who shows up to shul a bit late one morning, hasn't got a pair of tefillin. His visitor goes up to the gabbai and says, excuse me, do you have a pair of tefillin that I can borrow? The gabbai says, I'm sorry, all we've got is Rabbeinu Tam's. The man says, that's fine, I'll use them till he gets here. But I don't know if there was anybody else when Avraham Avinu was busy laying them. And I'm really grateful to Rabbi Lawrence for laughing at that joke. I don't know if he's heard it before or not, but it's a great act of chesed to laugh at a joke in any event. I want to start by looking at a Gemara in Masechet Yoma at the very beginning of the third perek. The Gemara at the beginning of the third perek on Daf Kaf Chet Amud Bet says as follows: Amar Rav. So you should be able to see this on your screens. Amar Rav. Rav said, "Kiyem Avraham Avinu kol haTorah kula." Avraham Avinu, he observed the entire Torah. Shenemar. How do we know that? Because we've got a pasuk in Sefer Bereishit which says, "Ekev Asher Shama Avraham Bekoli." Since Avraham, HaKadosh Baruch is saying, listened to my voice, and then the Gemara actually doesn't quote the rest of the pasuk. That's of course what's important for us. Vayishmor mitzvotai, vayishmor mitzvotai, chukotai, v'torotai. So he observed my mitzvot, chukotai, my statutes, v'torotai, and my Torahs. So we see from this that Avraham Avinu, HaKadosh Baruch has testified that Avraham Avinu observed the Torah. Amalei Rav Shimi Bar Chiya l'Rav. Rav Shimi Bar Chiya said to Rav, hold on a minute. Is it really reasonable to suggest that Avraham observed the entire Torah? Maybe Va'ema Sheva Mitzvot. Maybe we should just say that in actual fact, all Avraham Avinu observed was the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the seven Noachide laws. It's unlikely that he observed mitzvot that were specific for Jews. There weren't Jews yet at that time. Avraham Avinu was a believer, but he wasn't yet a Jew. So the Gemara responds to that, Ha'ika Nami Mila. You can't say that Avraham Avinu only observed the Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach, because there's also the mitzvah Brit Mila. And we certainly know that Avraham Avinu observed the mitzvah Brit Mila because he was instructed to do it by Hashem. Okay. Ve'ema Sheva mitzvot u'mila. So perhaps Avraham observed the seven Noachide laws plus the mitzvah of Brit Mila. Amar lei. So Rav responded, Imkein mitzvotai v'torotai lamali. Why does it say mitzvotai v'torotai? Why does it say that Avraham observed my mitzvot and my torot? If it's just the Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach, what's included by this lengthy statement of Vayishmor Mishmarti, Mitzvotai, Chukotai, V'torotai? We've got so many expressions there. What would it be referring to? Amar Rav Yitema Rav Ashi. Rav, or you might say it was Rav Ashi, said, Kiyem Avraham Avinu Afilu Eruvei Tavshilin. Now, not only did Avraham Avinu observe all the mitzvot of the Torah, but he also observed Afilu Eruv Tavshilin, even a seemingly unimportant mitzvah, that Midrabanan, a seemingly unimportant rabbinic mitzvah of Eruv Tavshilin, which we make on Erev Yom Tov, if Yom Tov falls on a Friday. Shenemar, because how do we know that he observed Eruv Tavshilin? Shenemar, because the pasuk says, Torotai, Avraham observed my Torot. Torotai indicates more than one Torah. Achat Torah Shebichtav, Vachat Torah Sheba Alpeh, both Torah Shebichtav and Torah Sheba Alpeh. So Avraham Avinu kept the entire corpus of Mosaic law as well as the entire corpus of rabbinic law. Excuse me. We will discuss later on in the shiur why the example given here is one of Eruv Tavshilin. If we're saying that Avraham Avinu observed all the rabbinic mitzvot, there are plenty of rabbinic mitzvot that we could have mentioned. Why specifically does it mention the mitzvah of Eruv Tavshilin? And why is Eruv Tavshilin given Afilu Eruv Tavshilin? Even Eruv Tavshilin, as if that is something absolutely astonishing in its own right. So the obvious question is, what does it mean that Avraham Avinu observed all the mitzvot in the Torah? First of all, the Torah hadn't been given. And second of all, many of the mitzvot in the Torah are of a historic nature. If we take it to its logical conclusion, are we going to say that Avraham Avinu sat down to Seder on Pesach night and read the Haggadah, beginning with Avadim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim, speaking about how his descendants were slave to Paro in Egypt, and went right through to the end of Chad Gadya, which wasn't even composed till early modern times? Are we going to say that Avraham Avinu laid tefillin when tefillin mentioned Yetziat Mitzrayim? If he did lay tefillin, then did they include the reference to Yetziat Mitzrayim, or didn't they include the reference to Yetziat Mitzrayim? Conceivably, one might say that, okay, so there were certain prophetic aspects to the, to Avraham Avinu's observance of the Torah. Yes, maybe he did sit down and say, Avadim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim, because Avraham Avinu was a prophet, he was a Navi, and he was able to predict what was going to happen in the future, and how he was... how his descendants would mark these occasions. But you certainly come to a sticky wicket if we talk about the mitzvah of Mechiat Amalek, the mitzvah of destroying, eradicating Amalek. So are we going to say that Avraham fulfilled the mitzvah of eradicating Amalek? Number one, I don't think Amalek existed yet in the time of Avraham. Even if it did, if Avraham eradicated Amalek, then how would Amalek have been able to come in the future and attack Bnei Yisrael? So even if we want to say certain things had a prophetic dimension to them, there are clearly going to be certain aspects which are challenging. Added to the fact, of course, that Rav's statement is, Kiyem Avraham Avinu kol ha-Torah kula, that Avraham Avinu observed the entire Torah. So, if we're saying, okay, that will include mitzvot such as the historical mitzvot, fine. But what about mitzvot to do with a melech? Was Avraham Avinu a melech? Did he have subjects? Was Avraham Avinu a kohen? Was he a levi? Did he take trumat maaseh from what he'd received as a levi and give it to a kohen? When perhaps Kohanim didn't exist, of course there was Malki Tzedek. Was Avraham Avinu a woman? Did he bring a Korban Yoledet after giving birth? So obviously lots of very fundamental questions that we need to get our heads around. And what we're going to see during the course of the shiur is that there are essentially two approaches. Some authorities take it as its face value and aren't fazed by any of the questions that I've raised, whereas others recognise or address these questions and realise that we have to have perhaps a broader understanding of what this phrase might mean. I want to start, however, with a passage of the Maharsha in Masechet Yoma, where the Maharsha flags up to us the fact that there's a mission at the end of Masechet Kiddushin, which says that Asa Avraham kol haTorah ad shelo nitzna, that Avraham did all the mitzvot in the Torah even before it was given. Now, if there's a Mishnah which is telling us that Avraham kept the whole Torah, then what is Rav telling us when he says the same thing? Because a Mishnah is a Tannaitic source, an early source, whereas Rav was an Amora, a much later source. And an Amora is never going to just tell us something which is a Mishnah Mefuresh. It's a well-known Mishnah. Might mention a Braita, which wasn't aware of, but certainly a Mishnah the Amoraim would have been aware of. So they never say something which has already been taught. So so Marashah's question is, what was Rav trying to suggest to us that wasn't already included in the Mishnah? So the Marashah says as follows: the hatam lo mashma elasha sa kol hamitzvot haynu haasiyim. So the Marashah suggests perhaps what the Mishnah in Masechet Kiddushin is referring to is Avraham observing the positive mitzvot. Avalishna derav kiyem, but where Rav says that Avraham kiyem, he fulfilled all the Torah, mashma nami alav in shel Torah, it implies that he also fulfilled the negative mitzvot in the Torah, meaning Asa, the Mishnah in Masechet Kiddushin says, Asa Avraham, that Avraham did the mitzvot in the Torah. That means he put on his tefillin, he ate his matzah, he said Shema, and he built his sukkah. But he sat down in his sukkah eating a ham sandwich. He sat down to the Seder table eating a bowl of pasta. That's what the Mishnah in Masechet Kiddushin would suggest to us. Rav came along and said, no, even the negative mitzvot Avraham Avinu also observed, so therefore he didn't sit in his sukkah eating a ham sandwich, and he didn't sit down to the Seder table eating a bowl of pasta. So that's the observation that the Maharshah makes. Rav Yosef Chaim of Baghdad, the Ben Ish Chai, in Sefer Ben Yehoyada, he also addresses this question and says there's a significant difference between the term asa and kiyem. Kiyem lekayem means to make something endure, whereas la'asot just means to do something. He says the Mishnah in Masechet Kiddushin indicates, yeah, fine, Avraham Avinu did the mitzvot, but there was no enduring impact from them. Rav came along and said, no, Avraham Avinu fulfilled the mitzvah in the same way that a mitzvah va'oseh fulfills the mitzvah. There's a concept that there's a difference between a person who's not obliged to do a mitzvah and does it, and a person who is obliged to do a mitzvah and does it. Now, we might think that that it's actually a greater thing to do to voluntarily do a mitzvah. Meaning that, let's say, it seems for some reason that today's shiur is exclusively gentlemen. So we can give an example of, you know, if we have a wedding anniversary, sort of we're kind of expected to, you know, buy flowers or something like that. So buying flowers for a wedding anniversary is, you know, there's a mitzvah to buy the flowers for the wedding anniversary. If you buy flowers on just a random day throughout the calendar, so it's true your wife might get a shock, but once she's over the shock, she'll realise this is something really wonderful. You know, this is, you know, of course we expect flowers on a wedding anniversary, but just on a regular Wednesday, you know, to come home and find flowers, that's something really special. You get more brownie points for the flowers when it's not expected than when it is expected. However, in a halachic sense, that's not actually true. In a halachic sense, we've got a principle, gadol ha-metzuvah va'oseh, mimi she'eino metzuvah va'oseh, that a person who's got an obligation to fulfill a mitzvah gets a greater reward than a person who's got no obligation. So, for example, tkiat shofar, a man has an obligation to fulfill the mitzvah of shofar or Rosh Hashanah. A woman doesn't have an obligation to fulfill the mitzvah of shofar or Rosh Hashanah. It's a mitzvah tasei shasman grama. It's a positive time-bound mitzvah. So Avraham Avinu had no obligation to fulfill any of the mitzvot. So according to the Mishnah, Asa, he did them, but there was nothing really significant about that. There was nothing enduring about that. Rav comes along and says, no, kiyem, he fulfilled them in the way, or got the reward as a person who's got an obligation, even though Avraham Avinu didn't have an obligation, he'd risen to such a lofty level that it was as if he had such an obligation, and that's what the term kiyem means. So that's the first point to flag up, this fact that Rav, on the face of it, seems to be repeating something which is in a Mishnah in Masechet Kiddushin. Now, as I said, some authorities take the Gemara that we've seen at its face value and say that Avraham Avinu kiyem kol haTorah kula, that Avraham Avinu observed the entire Torah before it was given, and he sat down on Sukkot in the Sukkah, and he lit Chanukah candles on Chanukah, and he laid tefillin every day, etc., etc. But not everybody says that. One of the earliest people who reject such a literal reading of the Gemara is Rabbi Avraham ben HaRambam, the son of the Rambam, Maimonides' son. And Rabbi Avraham ben HaRambam says as follows. Ulefish is the bottom source you can see here on the page. Ulefish etimu ma'aseh mitzvot eila al yidei ha'avot alav ha'shalom le'mitzvot ha'torah im emunatam ba'achdut ha'borei. What we've got here is Chazal saying that the Avot, the patriarchs, they certainly believed in the uniqueness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or the solitary existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God is the one God. And they rejected any notion of there being a multiplicity of gods. And because they loved God and they feared God, and these notions lie at the very foundation of Jewish observance, Amru Bahem Kihen Kimu Kol HaTorah Kula. Therefore, Chazal said that the Avot observed the entire Torah. But Lo Sheshamru Et HaShabbat O Achlu Matzah BeFesach. It doesn't mean that they observed the Shabbat or that they ate matzah on Pesach, Kamo Sheyala Adat, as one might have thought. So Rabbi Avraham ben HaRambam is saying that it doesn't make any sense whatsoever to say that the Avot kept the mitzvot in the way that we observe the mitzvot. And what it really means is that the purpose of us observing the mitzvot is to grow close to Hashem through serving Him, through fearing Him, and through loving Him. And that's exactly what the Avot were able to achieve even without the mitzvot. Even without the mitzvot, they were able to go that close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, it was as if they'd observed all the mitzvot. So if your initial reaction when you saw the title of today's shiur was, did Avraham Avinu lay tefillin? If your response, well, of course he didn't, that's ridiculous, then you're in good company with Rabbi Avraham ben HaRambam. He also feels that way. And jumping a couple of centuries, we find the Netziv in his commentary Merome Sadeh of Masechet Kiddushin says the same thing. Three lines from the end there, he says Ela Perush Asa. What does it mean that Avraham did the mitzvot? Sheyaga va'amad al pilpura shel Torah leida prate dinim. He really focused and delved into what Jewish life and observance was all about, to understand the details of the dinim, perhaps of the Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach, v'zenikra gam kein asa. And that's what we mean by asa, that he did the mitzvot. Doesn't mean to say that he literally laid tefillin. And if you think about it, you know, everybody's familiar with the notion of Yaakov, for example. Yaakov Avinu was Ish Tam Yoshev Alim. He was a straightforward person who dwelt in tents. And Chazal tell us, you know, that he dwelt in the tents of Torah. And they tell us that he went for 14 years to the yeshiva Shem Ve'eveh. You know, what was it that he did in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'eveh for 14 years? Did he learn Gemara? Did he go to lunch and learn? Well, he could have had the lunch, but what was he going to learn? you know, it doesn't mean to say that he opened the Chumash Rashi and started learning like that. It means that Yaakov spent that time pondering the existence of God, thinking about how one should morally and ethically and religiously serve the Almighty. That's what it means. And then Tziv is saying that's also what Avraham Avinu did when it says he observed the Torah. It means that he delved into the meaning of God and what God demands of human beings. Okay, let's move on now, though, to the Ramban. And the Ramban, in his commentary on Parashat Toldot, where this Pasuk, Kavayishmor Mishmati, Mitzvotai, Chukotai, V'Torotai, comes up, the Ramban addresses this question, and he addresses it in two ways. The first way he addresses it is by looking at the Pasuk, separate from the Drasha of Chazal. And looking at the Pasuk, he says, clearly it's referring to more than just the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, because it says, Mitzvotai Chukotai V'Torotai. But it's straightforward to understand that it just means an expansion of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. It means being a bit stricter than what Hashem absolutely demands in the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, and adding extra levels of stricture and, if you like, chumrah and restrictions to those Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. But then he goes on in the second paragraph to address what Chazal tell us in the Gemara Masechet Yomah, and to suggest that you address the fact that Chazal say that Avraham observed all the mitzvot in the Torah. And he asks a question. He says, hold on a minute. He's making a little bit of a jump, which lots of Mepharshim do. Of course, we just said that Avraham observed all the mitzvot in the Torah. Most of the Mepharshim and some of the sources in Chazal extend this also to all of the Avot, to Yitzchak and Yaakov as well. So it's notable, of course, that Agamor only says this about Avraham, but the discussion goes beyond Avraham and with Yitzchak and Yaakov. So the Ramban raises a famous question. He says, hold on a minute. You say that Yaakov Avinu, for example, observed all the mitzvot in the Torah. I can point you to a mitzvah that he didn't observe. There's a prohibition against marrying two sisters whilst they're both alive. Well, Yaakov Avinu, he married Rachel and Leah while they were both still alive. I can show you that Yaakov didn't observe all the mitzvot in the Torah. So how are we going to deal with that? So the Ramban has an answer. He says, the second paragraph, so it seems to me, Shelamad Avraham Avinu HaTorah Kula Beruach HaKodesh, that Avraham used his prophetic insight to learn the entire Torah, Vasakba V'Tamei Mitzvoteha V'Sodoteha, and delved into it and its mitzvot, V'Shamar Otah Kula K'mo She'enu Mitzvah V'Oseh, and he observed it, even though he didn't have an obligation to do so, U'Shmirato Otah Haya Be'eretz Ba'aretz Milvad, but he only observed it in Eretz Yisrael. When he wasn't in Eretz Yisrael, then he didn't observe the mitzvot of the Torah. The mitzvot of the Torah, certainly for Avraham, were associated, and for the all of the Avot, they were associated with a great spiritual degree of insight and inspiration. And that was only possible in Eretz Yisrael. That wasn't possible outside of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, outside of Eretz Yisrael, they didn't observe the mitzvot of the Torah. V'yakov b'chutz la'aretz nasa ha'achayot. And we see that it was in chutz la'aretz, it was in Haran, that Yaakov married the two sisters. And when he was in Haran, he didn't need to, either didn't need to or wasn't able to observe the mitzvot of the Torah. And therefore, there's no contradiction here. When he was in Eretz Yisrael, he observed the mitzvot of the Torah. And we see that was Baal Korcho. He was forced into that when he returned to Eretz Yisrael. Rachel died, so he was no longer married to two sisters. So when he was in Eretz Yisrael, he observed the mitzvot of the Torah. When he was outside of Eretz Yisrael, he didn't observe the mitzvot of the Torah. So that's the way that the Ramban answers the question. The Marsha, in his Chidushei Agadot, the Marsha, one of the Achronim, but found at the back of the Gemara, he addresses the same question. He gives a technical halachic answer. And he says, V'hanireh b'chol zeh, It seems to me. The fact that Yaakov married two sisters, Yesh Lomar, one has to say, Kevan divnot nochrim hayu ha'imahot. Remember, Rachel and Leah were born of Gentiles. They weren't born Jewish. Uchshenisu liYaakov nitgayru. When they married Yaakov, they converted. Ein lahem kurva klal. Then in actual fact, halachically, they weren't related to each other. We've got a principle that a person who converts is kikatan shenolad dami. They are like a newborn, and they lose their biological relationships, lose halachic significance, and therefore Rachel and Leah, they were newborns. They became Jewish, and therefore they lost their biological relationship to each other. And this was something that, in actual fact, in the future, you know, even nowadays, in theory at least, if you had two sisters who came to convert, they both converted, then one person would be able to marry both of them. Not simultaneously. We don't allow people to marry simultaneously, have more than one wife at a time nowadays, but in theory, a person could marry one, divorce her, and then marry the other one. Because they're not regarded as being halachically related to each other. Of course, the Maharsha hasn't answered the question of how could they convert, who was going to be on the Bet Din. You need a Bet Din of three Jews. I don't know who the three Jews were for the Bet Din that converted Rachel and Leah. But that's a question to discuss over the dinner table. Okay, so that's one question that is raised. How did Yaakov Avinu marry two sisters if he observed all the mitzvot in the Torah? Another question comes up, and we see how seriously certainly the Achronim take this issue and how literally they understand it, that Avraham Avinu observes all the mitzvot in the Torah. Now, a question addressed by the Briska Rav. The Briska Rav, also known as Rav Velvula, or the Griz, Rav Yosef Zev Soloveitchik, the son of Reb Chaim Briska, the leader of the Brisk dynasty in Yerushalayim in the 1950s, he asks another question. He says, hold on a minute, we've got a much more fundamental issue. We've got a halacha that goy sheshavat chayav mita, that just as a Jew incurs the death penalty if they break Shabbat, a Gentile that observes Shabbat likewise acquires the death penalty. Now, if we say that Avraham Avinu wasn't a Jew yet, there was no such thing as a Jew till Matan Torah, and we also say that he observed all the Torah, so how could Avraham Avinu as a Gentile observe Shabbat? It's against the din for a Gentile to observe Shabbat. So Avraham Avinu, he was observing all the mitzvot, he was keeping Shabbat, but it was against the din for him to keep Shabbat. How is he going to deal with that? So the Griz answers and says that Avraham actually had, I was going to say a split personality, but he had perhaps what one might call dual halachic syndrome. That's just a halachic condition that I've just invented. But really what he was saying was that Avraham Avinu, he was in certain respects regarded as Jewish and certain respects as regarded as non-Jewish, meaning that he was a Jew. His identity was a Jew, but his halachic definition was as being non-Jewish. And therefore, he could observe Shabbat with his identity as a Jew, even though halachically he was non-Jewish. I suppose it's a bit like, you know, nowadays you can have on your tudat zehut. That's, you know, if you a non-Jew, a person who's got, perhaps a Jewish father and a non-Jewish non-Jewish mother, can identify as a Jew and go to Israel under the law of return, and they can have on their tudat zehut, they can say Jewish. Halachically, they're not Jewish, but they've got the Israeli identity of being Jewish. So the Griz says Avraham Avinu, as a person, he was Jewish. As a halachic entity, he wasn't Jewish. So as a person who was Jewish, he was able to observe Shabbat. That's the answer of the Griz. The Sefer HaMakneh gives a different answer. Sefer HaMakneh says, What do we mean when we say that the Gentile is not allowed to observe Shabbat? So the Gentile is not allowed to observe Saturday as Shabbat. If a Gentile observes Saturday from midnight on Friday night till midnight on Motzei Shabbat as Shabbat, that's where they've transgressed. But if they observe, for want of a better term, Shabbos as Shabbat, so then that's all right, because they will have done work on Friday afternoon, and they'll do Malacha also on Motzei Shabbat. So they won't have observed Saturday as Shabbat, they'll have observed Shabbos as Shabbat, and if a Gentile wants to observe Shabbos as Shabbat, then they're allowed to. And indeed, that's the way we pass, and this is one of the considerations that we factor in when a person's converting. Obviously, they need to observe Shabbat as preparation for their conversion. If a Gentile's not allowed to observe Shabbat, how can they observe Shabbat? We follow this view of the Makne and other poskim, that it just means that the Gentile's not allowed to observe Saturday as Shabbat. But if they observe Shabbos as Shabbat, then that's going to be all right. So it seems that it was all right for Avraham Avinu to keep Shabbat. A further question addressed is, if Avraham kept all the mitzvot in the Torah of his own volition, then why did Hashem need to command him to do the mitzvah of Brit Milah? Avraham Avinu should have already done the mitzvah of Brit Milah. Hashem could have come along and said, listen, Avraham, this Brit Milah that you've done, it's a very wonderful thing, and I'm going to command it to your descendants, but we would have expected Abraham to have already fulfilled the mitzvah of Brit Milah. Why was it that he hadn't fulfilled the mitzvah of Brit Milah already, if he was so committed to observing the mitzvot? So, again, we've got two answers here. The first is an answer, again, of the Griz, the Brisker Rav, Reb Valvula, who says, gives a technical answer. He says, "V'anireh delekiyum mitzvah mila." He says, in order to fulfill the mitzvah brit mila, "Tzarich sheyehe alav chalut arel." You need to be not just uncircumcised, but you need to have the halachic status of being uncircumcised. "Uvehimolo have chalut mahul." And then, when you have brit mila done, then you become a person who is circumcised. So it's not just the existence of the foreskin on your body which gives you an obligation of Brit Milah, but it's the halachic status of being uncircumcised. And the Griz says that until there was a mitzvah of Brit Milah, then Avraham didn't have the status of being uncircumcised. He might have had a foreskin, but he didn't have the status of being uncircumcised. And therefore, if he didn't have the status of being uncircumcised, then he couldn't... He couldn't fulfill the mitzvah Brit Milah, so it was just impossible for him to fulfill that mitzvah. Of course, what the Griz hasn't said is that this might work as a good answer for lots of the other questions. Did Avraham, remember Yitziat Mitzrayim every day when he said Kriyat Shema? Well, if it hadn't happened, then he couldn't remember it. So, you know, perhaps even the Griz would say that Avraham didn't say Kriyat Shema and remember Yitziat Mitzrayim, because you can't remember something that hasn't happened, in the same way that you can't give Brit Milah to a person who doesn't have the status of being an RL. Even though they might have a foreskin, they haven't got the status of being uncircumcised. The Sri Deish, Reb Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, who was one of the last rabbinic leaders of Germany, he was the final rector of the Hildesheimer Rabbinical Seminary in Berlin prior to the war. And then after the war, he went to Montreux. He was considered for the position of Rosh Beit Din here in London in the 1930s. He addresses this in one of his tshuvot, and he gives two answers. His first answer is that, what's the purpose of Brit Milah? The purpose of Brit Milah is a sign of the covenant between Hashem and the Jewish people. If there's no covenant, then there's no Brit Milah. Until HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the covenant with Avraham, there was no covenant. So there's no point having that sign of the Brit Milah. It's like, you know, you go out in the morning You take your handkerchief out of your pocket. You tie a knot in your handkerchief. Your wife says to you, why have you tied a knot in your handkerchief? You say, I don't know, it's to remind me of something I might find out about later. Oh, then she'll say, well, buy me the flowers today. Then you become obligated to buy the flowers and it doesn't become voluntary. But it's like tying a knot in your handkerchief before you've got anything to remember. Avraham Avinu, if he'd done Brit Mila before the covenant had been established, then he's got a sign of... He doesn't know what the sign is for. There's no point in having that sign. So that's the first answer of the Sri Deish. But then the Sri Deish goes on to say, Ula Dati, it's about here in the middle, I've marked it. Ula Dati, Lokiyem Avraham Avinu Mitzvot Matzo Mara B'chadome. Doesn't make any sense to say that Avraham ate Matzah and Mara and such things. V'kiyem Raka Mitzvot Shelo Nitnu B'tor Ot V'zeiche L'mora Ot She'eru Achareiche. He only observed the Mitzvot, which were nothing to do with historical commemorations. You have to say the fact that it says that he observed the whole Torah, ain't over mashma kol davke. It doesn't literally mean everything. It doesn't make sense to say he gave half a shekel, you know, in the month of Adar every year for the Beit HaMikdash. There was no Beit HaMikdash and nobody to collect it. You know, what's he going to do with it? So it's logically preposterous to suggest such a thing, and at most it means that Avraham, he observed certain mitzvot which were not had no historical dimension to them. It might well be, according to the Sri Deish, that Avraham Avinu said Shema Yisrael every day. Whether he said the text as it appears in the Siddur, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Baruch Shem Kvod Malchut Tol Olam Ve'ed, or whether he just every day made a declaration about the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't know, but that's certainly a reasonable suggestion. Perhaps every day Avraham Avinu did tie something to his arm next to his heart and something to his head next to his brain to remind him of the existence of Hashem. Those are things that it's very possible that he did. It's very likely that when Avraham Avinu married Sarah Imenu, that he didn't just, meet her down at a pub, the Hagar's Well or something like that, and take her home with her, but he was Mekadesh, he made a formal arrangement with her. All those things are very, very likely, but it's unlikely, or certainly very possible, but it's certainly unlikely or impossible that he would observe all the mitzvot of the Torah in their entirety. Want to finish off with the question of the Eruv Tavshilin. Okay. Avraham Avinu, the Gemara told us, even fulfilled the mitzvah of Eruv Tavshilin. When Yom Tov fell on a Friday, so he made an Eruv Tavshilin on the Thursday. I suppose if it was a two-day Yom Tov, 2 days of Rosh Hashanah that Avraham Avinu was observing, then he would have made the Eruv Tavshilin on the Wednesday so that he could cook on the Friday. And why is this singled out? So the Ritva, in his commentary to the Gemara, the Ritva, one of the Rishonim, he says that Eruv Tavshilin's mentioned is because it's almost a very insignificant mitzvah. Really, it's just to remind you that Shabbat's more important than Yom Tov, and you should make sure that you've got food for Shabbat. And you can, you know, all you need is one kazayat of food, and it can, that can be enough for an Eruv for the whole of Kinlos. So it's a, fairly small mitzvah. And even a small mitzvah like that, Avraham Avinu observed. So that's the way the Ritva addresses it. But Rav Kook, in his letters, he took a different approach. And I heard this Rav Kook on a number of occasions from Rav Rabbi Harav Amital, Zichron Olif Racha, Rosh Yeshiva Yeshivat Haaretz Zion. And Rav Kook says that where it says that he made Eruv Tavshilin, or that he observed the mitzvah of Eruv Tavshilin, doesn't necessarily mean that he put a challah and a hard-boiled egg on the sideboard or in the fridge on Wednesday afternoon and said a bracha over it as the Eruv. He said, what is the purpose of Eruv Tavshilin? He says the purpose of Erev Tavshilin is to show us that there's a subtle difference between the Kedusha, the sanctity of Shabbat, and the sanctity of Yom Tov. Both days are holy. They've both got Kedusha. One might have thought that there's no real difference between the Kedusha of Shabbat and the Kedusha of Yom Tov. Erev Tavshilin comes along to show us that there is a subtle difference between those different types of Kedusha. And that's what the Gemara has in mind when it says that Avraham Avinu even observed the mitzvah of Erev Tavshilin. It means that his spiritual antennae, if you like, were so finely tuned that he was able to distinguish between something which was very holy, very sacred, and something which had a lesser degree of sanctity. He was very finely aware of different levels of sanctity, different levels of Kedusha. So tuned in was he to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's how Rav Kook understands the whole Gemara here, where it says that Avraham Avinu observed the mitzvot of the Torah. It means that Avraham had a great deal of spiritual sensitivity to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was demanding of him, religiously, spiritually, ethically, and morally. And then it goes on to say, even to the degree of Erev Tavshilin, even to the degree that he was able to distinguish and differentiate between different types of Kedusha. So that's what I wanted to share with you today. Certainly, if you want to take the Gemara at face value and believe that Avraham Avinu laid tefillin every morning, davened three times a day, and used the Routledge Machzor rather than the Art Scroll, then there's good grounds to believe such a thing. But if you want to be less literal in your reading of that Gemara and understand that Chazal were trying to communicate a message to us about Avraham's spirituality, then we've seen that that's also a very, very valid way of understanding what Chazal was saying to us. So as ever, a pleasure sharing Divrei Torah with you. And Be'ezrat Hashem, next time we have a shiur together, it will be in the Beit Midrash at Kinloss, with everybody fizzling with their sandwich wrappers and seeing if there's another tuna rather than egg sandwich. So thank you all for joining us today.